You're listening to Chatting with Fleur, with Fleur Morin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Chatting with Fleur here at LA Talk Radio and your host, Fleur Morin. And you guys know this is a podcast, but in a different style, the Fleur style. So I hope you all been doing your homework, spreading love and kindness. And this episode is very special as well. I have Miki Yamashita. She's an actress, opera singer, and digital creator. Miki Yamashita is the voice of Marble, Villain Lady Bullseye in the Disney animated series Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Best known for her on-camera principal roles in primetime episodic television such as Cobra Kai, 9-1-1, and iCarly. Miki has also appeared in recurring roles in daytime dramas General Hospital, As the World Turns, and One Life to Live. She's raised in Massachusetts by her parents, a college professor, and a teacher. Miki is a second generation of Japanese American who began ballet, piano, singing, and figure skating at an early age, and went to study opera at New England Conservatory of Music. So welcome to Chatting with Fleur, Miss Miki.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. The honor is mine. Like, today is an episode to celebrate the queen. And you've always been a queen, my dear friend. And it's an honor to have you. And thank you for making time, because you're a busy bee all the time. And I appreciate you.
I am.
So how you feeling? How you been doing?
I'm doing great. You know, should we tell them, should we tell your listeners how we met?
Yeah, tell them.
I feel like that's interesting.
Tell them.
Now, we were both, so I had, I was dealing with a medical issue and needed surgery and needed to get my SAG-AFTRA health insurance. And so I decided to revisit doing background work. And that's how we met, right?
Yes.
Do you remember what show it was?
It was Botch. Yeah.
It was Botch Legacy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Botch. That's right. That's right. And that was one of the first background jobs I did when I decided to start doing that again. I had done background work many years ago when I was starting my career in New York, but I wasn't a SAG-AFTRA member then. Mm-hmm. So this time as a union member, I was able to make some qualified earnings doing background work. And that's how we met. And then we met again on the set of 9-1-1. When I was cast in a principal role. And I remember looking out at the background performers thinking, I know there's got to be one person that I did background work with that's here today. And sure enough, you were there. So I'm so glad we got reacquainted there. And we were able to chat a little bit. And,
yeah.
And thank you for inviting me.
No, thank you. And it's so beautiful to have you in my show. And always, you know, fun and an honor to work on set with you. You're the best as well. And, you know, I was so proud of you seeing you on 9-1-1 and seeing you, like, how hard you have worked. All of us, we work hard to be where mm-hmm. we at. It hasn't been handed out to us. We're hard workers. And I was so proud to see you, girl, that almost got me on tears because, like, Jesus, we need this, you know, more representation. Honor and proud of you. And I still, you know I'm how I am. And I embrace queens.
Thank you so much. I was so excited to be on that show because it was the season premiere, mm-hmm. season 8 premiere. And I know a lot of people were going to be tuning in. So it was a great show to work on. And I have to say that what was great about going back to working background after all these years to try and get my insurance was that I was used to being on these big budget television and film sets, right? Which when you only do principal work, it's intermittent enough so that you're not used to being on set all the time. So when you get there, it's kind of nerve-wracking because you forget how much everything costs and how expensive the cameras look, and there's hundreds of people. And I have to say that this time when I did principal work on that show, I was much less nervous because I was so used to being on set because of the background work. And so that surprised me, but it makes sense, right? Because I had been, what's great about background work is that you get so used to being on set, and then you're also in working in a capacity that's a little less pressure than doing principal work and being responsible for dialogue, right?
So, right, we still have pressure, girl. You know, yes, I always say being BG is not just being BG. Like, I had the blessing and the honor to get featured, and you have to know your stuff. If you're not an actor, if you're not trained, then you are not going to make it. And being a BG is still an actor, and you've been awesome. I saw you doing your thing as BG, feature, and now look at you. I'm so proud of you. And especially everything you've been through, you know, with your medical situation. And if you don't mind to share the audience what you've just been through.
I'm totally happy to share it. So I've been a working actor for many, many years. I'm a member of three unions, Actors Equity Association, which covers theater performers. I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, of course, for film and television. And I'm also a member of the American Guild of Musical Artists, AGMA, which covers opera singers, because I'm a professional opera singer as well. And I have been able to access the health plans of SAG-AFTRA and also Actors Equity at different points in my careers, career when I was working in different capacities. But the SAG-AFTRA health insurance has gotten more and more difficult to access as a member, because there are earnings requirements. And as of right now, the earning requirement for SAG-AFTRA to qualify for health insurance, you have to make $27,500 in four consecutive financial quarters in order to qualify for the health insurance. And believe it or not, the most recent data shows that less than 10% of SAG-AFTRA's 170,000 membership is able to access the health plan through qualified earnings. So that's a very small percentage. And it's incredibly challenging as a professional actor to access health care. So I had been diagnosed in March, April of this year. I had a sonogram that showed that I had about 15 growths in my lower abdomen, and they were probably non-cancerous, right? Which is great news.
But thank God. I was praying for you when I found out about it.
And so I got that diagnosis, and they said the only way to resolve this issue is for you to get them surgically removed. And I said, okay. And so in order to get that to happen, I needed to qualify for health insurance. And that was around April. And so I had until my deadline of June 30th to qualify for the union's health insurance. And so I had to go public on social media to explain my situation and to try and garner support from the casting community and from the entertainment industry at large to see if there was any way that I could scramble to make those earnings by June 30th. I was about, halfway there when I started the campaign. So I'd earned maybe $12,000 in that, in the four quarters. And what made it incredibly difficult was that two of the four consecutive quarters that were my qualifying period were the actual SAG-AFTRA strike itself. So there was a two quarter work stoppage that was counting as part of my four quarters. So it was an even more of an uphill battle. And during that two quarter strike, 118 days, I served as a SAG-AFTRA strike captain as well. So I gave a tremendous amount of service to my union and it during the work stoppage. And so it made it all the more frustrating for me to not be able to access the union's health plan after having served on the picket line with so many of my fellow union members. So so then I embarked on this journey to try and make the SAG-AFTRA health insurance. And then and part of it was me going back to doing background work, how we met, right? Mm-hmm. And I also did a lot of voiceover work, a lot of dubbing, a lot of some on-camera principal work as well. I was able to get on 2 episodes of General Hospital. I was like here and there scrambling, yeah, and scraping together jobs to try and get to that threshold. And unfortunately, the deadline passed and I was not able to make the threshold. And what made things even worse was that I was rejected by Medi-Cal, which is the California version of Medicaid, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but finally, I was able to get covered California because I had been rejected by Medicaid. So I was able to get on a covered California plan that was that outside of their regular enrollment period because I had been declined by Medicaid. So anyway, finally, I was able to get insurance and then schedule my surgery, which happened in early September of this year. And I'm now about 5 weeks out from the procedure, and I am almost fully recovered.
That's great. So, and I found out about it after we reconnected on set on 911, and I was so happy to see you. And you know, I didn't know everything until I saw your stuff. I was like, wow, I was praying. I was like, yeah, I know she's gonna be fine because you have a special light.
And thank you. When I did 911, it was towards the end. It was maybe a couple weeks before my scheduled surgery, and by that point I was, the growths, which were constantly expanding inside me, were making me more and more sick. And I was worried, working up until the very end, how I was going to be able to manage it. But I somehow was able to do it. Mm-hmm. I was able to work until that final job where we saw each other. And and as uncomfortable as the growths made me, I was just praying to just get to the day of the surgery, just survive to then, and then I knew I would be okay, that I would be able to get through it if I could just make it to the day of the surgery. And I did. So I'm just so grateful.
Me too. And I had you in prayers, and I know that you were going to be fine because you have a special mission in this life, and it's not over, and you have a lot of things to accomplish career-wise, but also personally, and you have a special life. So
thank you.
Yeah. And you have a lot of people that love, you know, Miss Mickey. And I'm one of those. And I'm your fan, too. And, you know, you have a lot of things. And thank you so much for giving voice to the voiceless, for fighting for all of us. And I hope those loopholes that they need to be fixed, you know, for the insurance stuff, you know, especially with all the situation going on with the strikes and everything, they get taken into consideration and fixed for the better, so people like yourself that are going through difficult times don't get more stress on top of what they're going through.
Yeah, and when I went public with my condition and my campaign, I received so many messages, beautiful messages, mm-hmm, from other SAG members, other performing artists, people who had gone through extraordinary health challenges without being insured or being underinsured, and so just having their support. And I think the messages that I got from them gave me that much more courage to get through this and to survive and to try and turn this unfortunate situation into something that was motivating for me to try and move forward and help other performing artists with their qualify for insurance in the future. And so with my work with SAG-AFTRA and being an elected delegate and serving on all these committees and being very involved in union service, my hope is that I can use this story to just help other performers. And because for this large of a population of card carrying, you know, union actors to not be insured, is totally unacceptable to me. Mm-hmm. And so I have a new mission to help those people and to use my story to create some good.
And you are. And what I love about your story is that you open up to all of us to know your story. And you don't keep up with the Jensens. You just, this is it. This is what's going on. And this is the situation. And I love that, because that's why I'm embracing you, queen, because you're a queen. And you're putting things out there like how it is. And that's what we need, because sometimes keeping up with the Jensens doesn't help us. Life is life, and we're all humans. And we're in the entertainment industry. We love to entertain the audience, but, you know, we're humans too.
Absolutely.
And you're doing that with your work, and I pay homage to you and keep doing what you're doing. You're representing all of us, the voiceless. No, because of what we do, it's just we're voiceless because sometimes people, you know, don't know what we're going through. And you're putting voice.
Yeah, and I think the general public is presented with a very distorted view of what an actor's life is, whether we're working principal or BG or anything, or in theater or in opera. I think that there is a misconception sometimes that they think we're all wealthy and we're living very glamorous lives.
Lavish.
On the red carpet and all this stuff. But the truth is that a lot of us, well, the overwhelming majority of us struggle to earn a basic living. And so my journey, you know, has been to speak up for those of us who are rank and file performers, who are, you know, struggling to string jobs together. And I really want to be an advocate for all of the performing artists whose names you might not necessarily know, but their work important. Is extremely integral to the whole success of the industry.
But you're doing it, queen, and keep going. And you know, you have a lot of people that is going to continue supporting on your labor of, you know, that you're doing here as a captain of the union. And you're doing an awesome job. And one thing, do you think they're going to keep on pushing for more inclusive scripts and shows that include different, you know, different skins?
I mean, when I first started in the business, a lot of the discourse about diversity was pretty surface level. It wasn't, it was, I don't want to use the term lip service, except that it was. So there was a lot of discussion about it, but I don't think it was really being put into practice in a significant way, the way it is now. So I continued in, you know, pursuing the industry despite the ups and downs of the whole diversity issue. I mean, I was going to continue pursuing being a professional performer, regardless of how that movement went. Mm-hmm. And I think that things have gotten significantly better. And I do think that there's more accountability on production and in casting. But I do think that it's really most important for performers of every color to truly be their authentic selves. And that includes, you know, whatever that may be. And I think you have to, the what's most castable is your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter where
totally.
You come from.
Totally.
That seems kind of vague, but that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will just continue on my path to express that and to present that in to as many people as I can. And if you cast me, great. And if you don't, you will next time.
Yeah, that's how it is. And thank you so much for doing such a great job for representing all of us. And I'm honored. And this is your time to embrace you, queen. And don't forget to straight your queen and your crown. So I love that you do such a beautiful work in a nice queen way. And I'm honored. And I will never stop saying that, because to me, all my guests are special. And you guys have a beautiful story to share with my audience. And I always remind everybody, this is not just a talk show or, you know, a podcast. It's Floor Podcast, a different style. So excuse me if you don't agree with me. But the main thing is, you know, the audience to see that, you know, we're spreading love and kindness through our craft. And Miss Miki did time for this episode for Floor to expose what a beautiful story she has and what inspiration she is to the audience. And if she can do it, why not you can't, people on the other side of the lens. And I appreciate you, okay? You're a queen.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what else would you like to share with my audience? This is your time.
So I am a professional opera singer. I sang with Los Angeles Opera for 8 years.
I love that. I love opera.
When I came to LA, I came to pursue my film and to continue pursuing my film and television career. But I had this chance. I had this meeting. I had this audition with someone who I had done. I had done one of the productions of Chorus Line with. And her name was Leslie, and she's a brilliant dancer, choreographer. And she said, look, I'm working on something at Los Angeles Opera. You should come audition for us. And I said, okay. And so I went and auditioned. Then I ended up spending the next 8 seasons working with Los Angeles Opera. And, you know, I trained as a classical singer. So to be able to revisit that with this incredible opportunity to sing with them was so wonderful. And I became really passionate about, because I worked primarily with the community engagement and education department of the company, mm-hmm. I became very passionate about making sure that classical music and opera was accessible to everyone.
That's
and
beautiful.
As my social media presence grew, I realized that social media was a critical component to the expansion of audiences for classical music, especially to future generations.
Wow.
And so I'm committed to merging my skills in social media, particularly on Instagram, to help give classical musicians, especially for people from older generations of classical music, to help give them the tools to be able to preserve their legacy and their contributions to the art form, and also to be able to share it with a new audience, a younger audience who may or may not be as comfortable in the opera house as they are on social media.
Mm, that's such beautiful.
Another thing that I'm working on now.
Wow. Congrats. And I applaud you, because that's beautiful, because that's stuff that is fading, but you're doing your part to bring it back. Because
Do you know the movie WALL-E?
Yes.
Okay, so you know how WALL-E finds this VHS tape, mm-hmm. and keeps watching it,
yeah.
and it's been thrown away, mm-hmm. amongst all this garbage on planet,
yeah.
Earth?
Mm-hmm.
And that is such it's a beautiful movie. It's my favorite movie of all
it's
time.
It's like an analogy about, you know, opera.
Yeah, so when I think of that image, I think, oh, that could be Mozart, that could be Verdi, that could, mm-hmm. be classical music,
Beethoven,
period.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see that happen. And I want to do everything I possibly can to keep that from happening.
Aww.
To the music that I love. And so, so that's why I'm on a mission to help budding digital creators and promote other wonderful younger classical musicians who are very active on social media. They're creating hilarious memes and sharing their art with a whole new audience. And I love connecting with them and appreciating their work, and just continue contributing to the classical music community in that way. Because right now, 100% of my professional activity, all of my work is now in film and television.
Yeah.
But I still wanna practice opera and contribute.
Oh, you sound beautiful. I have seen your post on Instagram. It's so beautiful. And I know, because you're healing because,
yes.
of the surgery, you have to take a little break or take it easy. But yeah, I can't wait, you know. And let me know so I can help you, you know, promote. I always tell all my guests, anything, just let me know. We can promote it here on LA Talk Radio. I'm chatting with Floor. And, you know, anything going on, you're always welcome to let me know. And, you know, you have your girl here to support you.
Thank you so much. I think I will probably be able to sing again towards the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, major abdominal surgery
causes
a lot of upheaval.
Yeah.
And when you're a singer, you have to really support from, you know, from that area. And so you have to be 100% healed before you embark on returning to any, you know, physically taxing activity like opera singing. So I just want to make sure I'm 100% before I go back to.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to make sure you're okay, heal, and then you can get back on your opera because we're missing that. And you're awesome actress. You're like, you know, triple threat here too. So you're a queen too. So this is your time. So let me ask you, what faith means to you?
Well, I mean, I grew up Protestant and in the congregational denomination, and my father was a theology professor, and he taught me, to him, faith was as much an academic pursuit as it was a spiritual one. And that was a lesson I learned very early on. And he had so much respect for all religions as a field of study, as a professor. And so, and he was an ordained minister as well. So he would lead services at the church. And that's where I started singing, actually, in the children's choir at the church. Mm. So my spirituality is very connected to singing and to music, because that's where I first started singing.
That's where you got your angel voice.
Thank you. Mm. And so I've always felt connected to faith and to God, mostly through music. Mm. And when I was diagnosed with my illness this year, I went back and started reading the Bible again and started praying again and started asking more questions about whether or not I was religious or not, or, you know, because of course, when you're dealing with a crisis, you always turn to a higher power. And that, I have to say that helped me get through up until, you know, the many months. It felt like an eternity.
Wow.
But my faith definitely helped me stay focused on surviving and getting to the surgery and having faith that everything would go well. I'm so used to, I guess I'm a type A, I'm a person who prepares and does all this homework to make sure everything goes perfectly and try and control things, you know. But with this surgery, I learned that you cannot really be there when it happens. You're out cold, right? So I had to have faith in the people around me, in the doctors, in the hospital, in my family members who are praying for me, and just have faith that it was going to go well. And all I had to do was show up that day, and I had to just trust, mm-hmm. right? And I realized that how much I try to control things when I am able to, and that this was one instance where I
out of your hands,
and I had just had to go on my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned a lot from this experience, because that is very difficult for me to do, to trust in the system, the trust in the greater universe, right? And so because I was able to do that, I feel very humbled by it. And I feel that there are other things in life where you do have to put that trust in the universe and in a higher power. And so that's one of the great lessons I learned from this year.
That's beautiful. And I learned that to myself after like two surgeries. You know, I had a C-section with my daughter, and then years after I had my gallbladder removed. So I have to just rely on faith and trust, you know, like doctors and everybody. I was like, please take care of me, especially on my second surgery. I have a little one. I have to stay alive, you know. And it was during COVID time, so I was there by myself, no family or nothing, you know. So, yeah, so I can totally relate about your experience. And I'm so glad, you know, that faith pulled you through this and all the prayers of all the people that love you and care about you. And I'm one of those, and I knew you were going to be fine, and you'll be fine, you know. And I'm so glad that you're here sharing this beautiful story with the viewers so they can learn, you know, faith can pull you through in so many directions and help you during the times that you can't control. So thank you.
And I mean, I learned that I maybe it doesn't help me too much to be a micromanager, like to be like a control freak, right? So maybe that isn't exactly serving me all the time, right? So and my acting teacher said this to me once too, that I'm someone who prepares so meticulously, but then I also need to learn how to allow things to happen and to be open to the things that can't be predicted, mm-hmm. open to spontaneity, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, that's how it is. And I'm, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. I love that answer. So what's your biggest pet peeve?
Biggest pet peeve? Wow. In the world? Or it has to do with acting or?
Anything. What annoys you the most? It doesn't matter, acting or personal or, you know.
When people don't listen. And I apply that pet peeve to myself too, because I really need to work on being a good listener too for other people, you know, to really listen and not just wait to talk. So I think that when I feel like I'm not being heard or understood, that really hurts. That's really difficult for me to reconcile. Because a lot of times as artists, we're kind of like screaming into the wind, you know, and you feel like people don't recognize your value. Mm-hmm. But it all starts with you recognizing your value, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that way, the more you are centered in your own self-worth, the more people are likely to stop and hear what you have to say.
Right. So true. That is so true. I love those answers. You're really good, girl. That's my queen. So tell me, what made you decide to say yes to me here?
Oh, well, I mean,
I know you've been watching me.
I was so excited to see you the second time, because a lot of people, you know, when we do background, sometimes there are 500 background working in a single day, and it's hard to, you're placed with certain people and then you chat with them and then you try and make friends, but it's very difficult to reconnect once you've wrapped that job. Right. And so I was so excited to see you because on 911, because
it their was family. Shout out to 911. I love them. Kisses to them. I adore them.
They were like, you're in the scene with Angela Bassett. That's your scene partner. And I was so excited that I had gotten that opportunity. And then I was just so happy to see you because it was, you know, I was able to share that moment with you because you were there. And
you
then
know me, I always have good vibe. I don't hate, I love, and I embrace my people. Come on, you know.
I was so glad to see you. And then when you said, I have a podcast, I'm like, great, let's do it. And then, you know, and I have to say, you are very good at following up. And so I had it in my mind, even though I had my surgery coming up, I thought, oh, I have to remember that, Flor and I have to get back together when I'm done with this surgery so we can do the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Queen. I appreciate you. You're the best. And I can see you going far for so many good things that you're going and putting out there in the universe, so many good energy. And I know good things are coming your way, and keep going and speaking out for the voiceless and putting out there what's needed to be fixed for all of us. And thank you, an honor. And they're very lucky to have you there as a captain. And not because you're my friend, but I know such a beautiful human being you are. So that's one of the reasons I had it to have you, because my audience need to know my Mickey.
Thank you so much.
And I can't wait to see you winning an Oscar or one of those awards. I can't.
I would love my next step. I would really love to just be in a great recurring role on TV, and you know, I love comedy. So
you will, sending you goodbye and putting it out there in the universe. You will, my love. You will. It's coming your way.
And then the Oscar will be after that.
Yeah, put it out there in the universe, girl. You deserve it. Yeah. Hey. So tell me, what books have shaped your career the most?
Shaped my career. So I read a lot of books about acting and about the pursuit of acting. Okay. So my acting teacher, Howard Fine, has a wonderful book called Fine on Acting. I read that. I try to read that book at least once a year just to center myself on back to the craft and what the important thing is, you know, what the important things are to important principles to while I'm working. You know, it's important to always go back to the books that get you grounded back into the craft, because there's so many distractions mm-hmm. in the pursuit of acting, and there's so many there's so much busy work involved in pursuing acting that you really can't lose sight of why you're doing it, which is the craft. And so I love that book. Uta Hagen has several books, Respect for Acting and A Challenge for the Actor. I try and keep those books close by always, just to remind myself of, you know, how I connect to a character, how I am trying to behave authentically as that character in the circumstances that they're in, and to stay true to that despite all of the distractions and the other things going on while you're on set or on stage. I really just kind of focus on books about acting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell that's why you're the best on what you do, girl. So I'm very proud of you. And plus, she does voiceover, and not just any kind of voiceover. Can you share with the audience which voiceovers have you done?
So I auditioned for this. I'm going to go ahead and tell you the truth about this mm-hmm. because I think it's really important. For the first 5 years that I auditioned for voiceover, mm-hmm. I did not get a single job. And I thought, this is not for me. I am not good. I am not getting jobs. I'm an embarrassment. Okay. No. Hundreds of auditions. I didn't get a single one, child. Okay. Mm. And I'm like, this is not, I'm not good at this. This is not for me. I'm not getting any of these jobs ever. Forget it. But then I finally got one job. And that was a 7-episode recurring character on a Disney Channel show called The Lion Guard. And it was a Lion King spinoff series for children ages 3 to 7 on the Disney Channel. Wow. And I got this beautiful role. Her name was Nirmala. And she was a character, was a very maternal character who helped. The show is about Simba's child, Simba's son. And so my character helped Simba's son recover from an injury. And she was very therapeutic and very loving. And I got to play that character. And it's amazing to see yourself, your voice coming out of a Lion King lion, which is so iconic, right? The mm-hmm. Lion King lion. And you get your own character. It was just aww. Amazing. And so once I got that, I started getting better, more and better auditions for animation work. And I was recurring on a series called Little Ellen, which was about an animated series about the childhood of Ellen DeGeneres in aww. New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And so I was recurring on that series. And now I voice the character Lady Bullseye on a animated series called Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which is part of the Marvel multiverse.
Wow. That's beautiful.
And so, yeah, my voiceover work has finally kind of come to fruition after many, many years of feeling like I wasn't getting anything and that I should give up.
But that's a beautiful story. And that's why I like you, you know, just opening up to the audience and sharing how it is so they know what we go through as actors and, you know, and especially, you know, when you're trying to spread, you know, your horizon as a voiceover actor, so they can see it's not easy, but hard work pays off, and this is the result. Look, my beautiful friend Miki, you know. So congrats, girl. I'm proud of you, and keep going and continue being inspiration for all of us. And, you know, I'm very proud of you. And, you know, you have a cheerleader here in the background. Go, Miki. Go.
Thank you so much.
Don't stop,
and thank
please.
You, Flor, for being such a great presence on set and for being such a great contribution to all the sets that you're working on. And I mean, like you said, you know, background can be very, very challenging, and you really have to be on top of it to be able to consistently do that kind of work day in and day out, because it's a lot of hours, and it can be grueling.
Yeah, and the same it is when you get feature and when you get speaking parts too. Is the same thing, you know. You put a lot of hours, and you know, that's what we're here. You know, when I'm on set, I just love it, and you can tell, you know, because it's like a kid in the candy store. So, you know,
it is super exciting. It's so great. And then when you see, like, I told Angela Bassett when we were on set, I said, this is very special for me to get to act with you. Oh. And she was very lost about it. She goes, oh, you know,
she's the goddess. Yeah. She's the goddess.
This is amazing.
Yeah. We all, and, you know, it's like a full circle, because, you know, I was able to work with you on the same scene that you came out, and we were working with her. So it's an honor to work with the goddess. And, you know, 911, they know they have a special heart in my, you know, special place in my heart. They're family to me. I love them, and all the shows too that I'm able to work, and they know I love being on set. And, you know, especially with you and all my peers, you know, they don't know how much work we put in, but we do it with love and joy to entertain everybody out there. So thank you so much, Miki. You're just a treasure to me, and for the audience to share, you know, this time, you know, it's beautiful, and I appreciate you. So since you're in the Marvel universe, what superpower do you wish that you had?
Oh, superpower. You know, I wish I had the superpower to get people to respond to my emails. Do you ever get... does that count as a superpower? I know that seems kind of lame.
No, but sometimes, it's not.
You know how you send things into the void and you just have no idea if anyone's opening it or reading it or what, or whatever. I would love to have like some kind of X-ray vision into the minds of people who receive my emails. And I would love to know why they don't respond to them.
I hope you didn't shoot me one on when I was driving on the way to the studio.
I mean,
I'll get back to you after.
No, I think that the larger point here is that I would love, you know, as actors, we're constantly putting ourselves out there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you don't get any response. So a lot of times you're taping auditions, or you're submitting your headshot for something or whatever. And most of the time, the overwhelming majority of the time, you never hear anything back about that thing ever again for the rest of your life. And then the only time you find out you didn't get the job is one day you're on the treadmill and you hear someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, and someone's up there saying your lines. And you're like, oh, I auditioned for that.
You're like, ooh, I didn't get it.
And you're like, okay, I guess it's time for me to take that outfit out of the trunk of my car, because I obviously am not getting a callback for that, because the job was booked and that person's up there saying my line.
But guess what I do? Guess what I learned at the beginning? So I had to brush it off, and I don't take it personal. I just, okay, do what I need to do, submit it, and next. If they get back to me, yeah. If they don't, okay. Looking forward for the next one. So you don't have to get emotionally attached, and you don't feel like tore down, you know?
And, you know, voiceover helped me with that, because when you're submitting a voice audition, it's easier for some reason for me when I'm on camera.
Mm-hmm.
The rejection is more significant or something, because they're seeing me as well as hearing me. Mm-hmm. But somehow when I submit a voiceover audition, it's easier for me to just send it off to the universe and move on. I think I'm still working on that with my on camera, you know, but it's an ongoing, it's a process. Oh, it's a personal process that never ends because you have to care about it so much that you do an awesome job, but then you also have to care about it not at all, so that when you never hear anything back, you have the mental toughness to just move on with your life.
And you know, and you're doing a great job, so I know many good things coming your way, my love. And you know, just heal up and take it easy, because you're doing a lot of stuff. You're being jack of all trades, like I say. So, but take it easy, and you know, I appreciate you. And who's your celebrity crush? I want to know.
Celebrity crush, Jason Sudeikis, the guy who plays Ted Lasso.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I think he's so handsome and so funny, and I was so shocked when that whole thing happened with, like, his marriage broke up, and then, like, and I'm like, what? Why would you
leave?
Why would you not want to be with him?
Oh, girl, well, that's your celebrity crush, though.
And I hope I get to act with him someday.
Put it out there in the universe, okay? Well, let's see. And what qualities are important for you in a partner?
Oh, you know, I've been watching a lot of this, a lot of like dating and relationship content on YouTube. And there's a lot going on that, you know, there's a lot of noise, right, about that stuff. And I think, like, the more I think about, you know, I'm very used to being to operating on my own without a partner. And so I find that one of my best qualities is that I'm very self-sufficient and very very just able to do things quickly and efficiently by myself and not have to rely on another person. But if I were to have a partner, I think it would be someone who is very understanding about my calling in life, which is to be a performing artist. And even though it involves a lot of sacrifices, someone who would be supportive and encouraging of that, even though on paper, a lot of times it's very difficult to justify why we continue to do what we do. And so I think the most valuable partner to me would be someone who understood that that was something that I was committed to as a lifetime, you know, pursuit. So
that's beautiful. And that's important. Yeah. They have to understand what we do. And yeah, I love it. Thank you so much. And we don't have that much time. We have a few more minutes, but I don't want to be cut short. Do you have anything else that we left out that you would like to share?
You know, if I would really love to encourage performers and artists to, if they're a member of a performers union, like SAG-AFTRA or Actors Equity or AGMA, if they could look into how to get more involved with union service. It's very fulfilling, and it's something that helps your community. And I found that the more I commit to serving other performers and serving the community, like I did with my strike captain service, like I do co-hosting Solidarity, which is a grassroots SAG-AFTRA education group, and with all my committee service with SAG-AFTRA, the more I focus on serving the community as a whole, the more that goodwill comes back to me, whether it's in the form of friendships or jobs, or it just fosters like an upward spiral of activity that has resulted in, you know, tangible career advancement for me, and also spiritual enrichment, and just in general, the gratitude that comes from the whole community when you are committed to making their lives better and their pursuit of acting a little bit easier. You know, I would urge people, if you are having any kind of existential crisis or any kind of a struggle of like, why am I doing this? Why do I keep doing this? I'm not working, or I'm, you know, between jobs, or I feel stuck, you know, I would strongly urge them to look towards serving the community, because your purpose will come back to you.
Right. And you're doing that. And thank you, Queen. You're doing it, and keep going, and don't listen to the naysayers, because you're doing an awesome job. Very proud of you and honored to have you. And, you know, you have a cheerleader here, fan here. So, you know, I'm trying to build a sisterhood of queens and kings, because we need to remember that and spread love and kindness. And you're doing that with your beautiful labor of work through the union, and also outside the union, and with the opera and your acting. So you're an honor. And don't forget that you're a queen, okay? And
thank you so much.
And everything, you know, happens for a reason. And I'm glad that you're doing better, and you have a beautiful path in this world. So don't give up, and just remember that, okay? You're representing all of us. So we're here cheering for you, okay? An honor. And thank you for your time. And it was so beautiful to work with you again on set. An honor, and I'm proud of you. And you did amazing.
Thank you.
So please, everybody, keep spreading love and kindness. And don't forget, you know, straight your crown, king and queens. And I love you, and I'll see you next time. Thank you, Miki. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you, Flor.
Bye.
You're listening to Chatting with Flor Mara, only on LA Talk Radio.